6,000 people went to emergency departments across Northern Ireland last year after they self-harmed. The majority were young people aged between 15 and 24, and records show that a number of people sought help on more than one occasion, with over 8,000 incidents in 12 months. The statistic is from the Chief Medical Officer's annual report. We spoke to Michael McBride yesterday and he said intervention is needed. So how can that be done? Dr. Philip McNary is a consultant, a psychiatrist and former chair of the Royal College of Psychiatrists in Northern Ireland, and Andrea Cairns, education and training manager for the mental health charity Aware. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Doctor.
Starting with you, Philip, let's start from the beginning. It seems like quite a simple question, but what does self-harm mean, just for people that aren't familiar with the term?
Well, self-harm means any act that might potentially cause harm to the patient. Typically, people who come to emergency departments might have taken a number of tablets. Others may have cut themselves. And sometimes it could be something even more serious, say an attempt at hanging or perhaps attempting to jump from a height. So it can be any act of self-harm which is deliberate, which may cause some harm to the patient. And it's fair to say the vast bulk of cases which do come to emergency departments, the person doesn't have a fully formed intent necessarily to die. Quite often it is a way of expressing pain, of expressing hurt, and a desire to get help of some sort. It's a form of communication, really, of pain.
For under-16s, there was a 14.4 increase in the last couple of years. It's a very worrying number.
It is indeed, and there's no one simple answer to what's causing it. I think, in general, there's no doubt there are probably more pressures upon young people than there would have been in the past. We're all well aware of the pressures of exams, also the pressures outside schools, the pressures online and so on. And young people perhaps are finding it very hard to cope with things. I think, but there is a very important point, because Dr. McBride quite rightly yesterday talked about interventions. And in a sense, it's important to look at the very big picture, which is that Freud, of course, famously said, the child is father to the man. And I think we need, as well as looking at specific interventions, which is terribly important, as a society, and there's a real opportunity for our politicians here to say, what can we do to develop a society, a community, in which people can grow up physically and mentally healthy? And we do know that in Scotland in particular, and that Professor Harry Burns, the Chief Medical Officer in Scotland, recently was in Belfast last month, talking of their strategy, and it's a strategy for putting a lot of resource into young people, and that also includes sort of perhaps young teenage women who might be at risk of getting pregnant. It's into perinatal care, it's into social services, and here we're lucky to have social services linked in with health, a lot of resource into child and adolescent mental health care. It's prevention rather than cure, and that does involve a paradigm shift. Rather than just looking at the symptoms, trying to use the huge resource of our wonderful NHS and social services together, along with education and society at large, to create a more healthy society to prevent people ending up in the emergency department.
Well, Andrea, speaking of education, Aware do you go into schools to try and make people aware, educate young people about self-harm and the dangers of it? Is there enough funding provided for that?
Vinny, without the funding, we wouldn't be able to go into any schools at all. However, we only get enough funding to do around just under 50% of the schools. So, of course, we're always looking more funding to be able to do that. And that's actually going to change for us this year because the big lottery funding has stopped. But the Public Health Agency do fund that. Is there enough of it? No. We would like to see more of it. We would like to get into 100% of post-primary schools across Northern Ireland.
So hold on, Andrea. So you get 50%, enough funding to get to 50% of schools. So how are schools chosen? Who gets it and who doesn't?
What we do is write out to every school across Northern Ireland. We do that actually twice a year and invite the schools openly. It's not compulsory training. It's up to the school themselves. So we'll write out to them, inviting them to be in contact, and we'll come out and deliver the programme. Now, the funding we'll get will only allow us to do a year group in one school. We would love to be able to do everyone, but unfortunately the funding's not in place to do that.
And who should be...
Who
should be providing that funding, yeah?
Schools, Education Board, the Public Health Agency, as Dr. McNary was saying there, everybody needs to come together to realise this. We are trying to push this to be mandatory as part of the curriculum because our programme's called Me Matters in Young People, and what it does is raise an awareness, it's preventative tone, and teaches them about resilience and maintaining good mental health and learning how to deal with their problems. And it incorporates the cognitive behavioural therapy techniques to learn young people to recognise when they're having unhelpful thoughts and this is affecting their behaviour and emotion. So it should ideally be part of the curriculum. However, that's a battle that we'll continue to fight on and try and get more funding to make it that every child...
But that's my point, Andrea. So who's making the decision in terms of how much funding is given out and how much you receive to go into 50% of schools? Is this the PHA? Is this the Health Ministry? Where is this decision being made?
It's everyone. It's everyone's business. And those decisions need to be made up on the hill, as they call it. And then the budget for health and education training in schools needs to possibly be re-evaluated, and we'll be pushing for that as much as we can. And particularly we're relying on schools with our fundraising strategy to try and get schools to do some fundraising. Remember, we're a non-profit charity, and it's full cost of recovery that we'll only get. So we're looking at schools to possibly do some fundraising events to enable us to go into more schools and offer more sessions across Northern Ireland.
I'm looking at some of the stats here. Alcohol was involved in almost half of all presentations. And these are young people we're talking about. So,
yeah.
Obviously that begs the question how they're getting hold of the alcohol.
I think we're in a society where it's easily accessible. And if people are using it as a way to cope, they'll find a way to get it. There may be others looking older than younger, who'd be under 18, but actually look older. So there's several ways that they'll get it. And as Dr. McBride was saying yesterday, the underlying issue also could be an undiagnosed mental illness. And depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So we're trying to get that message out, and we're trying to teach them the signs and symptoms and then to try and get them the help and support that they recognise. And when we're evaluating our programmes, some of the young people are actually writing on the form, I think I have depression as a result of our training. So we'll do our best to try and get them the support that's required in order to get them some help to be able to get them to have more helpful behaviours and hopefully recover from the illness.
Even that line itself, Andrea, is quite frightening for a young person to write that on a form. They have no idea who's going to read that form. Obviously, it's for yourselves, but it must feel very isolated to be in that position that they feel that they have nobody to go to.
Part of that was not knowing that they have it. That's why we do what we do, to raise the awareness of the signs and symptoms. And then having the strength for them to admit that afterwards. Now, the information is confidential to ourselves. Now, we won't know which individual that is, but we'll contact the school raising the concern that someone in the room has disclosed. So we'll be invited back in again or encourage them to give the message about what organisations to go to ourselves, whether it's Lifeline, of a suicidal ideation or self-harm tendencies there. So we'll do our best to support the young person. And then some schools will also bring us in to do Living Life to the Full programme, which is a six-week programme, and also Mindfulness programme, which is another 6 weeks. Then we also encourage professionals to come on to our Mental Health First Aid programme, giving them the skills to become a trained mental health first aider with regards to mental health.
These are all great, but if there's an issue with funding, Dr. McGarry, are we being left behind here when it comes to money? Is it under-resourced, under-cash?
Look, we have a wonderful opportunity, Vinny, with a new assembly, and we know that Professor Ben Goa for the last few months has been working away behind the scenes with his panel, and I know that the new Health Minister, whoever he or she is, will be looking to work along with all the other parties, hopefully on a cross-party basis, to try and say what is the best future for our society over the next about 10-20 year span ahead, and that does involve a very robust public health approach in the broad sense of the word, that will require appropriate funding, but then there are savings to be made from the actual gains from that. And again, if you look across to what they're doing in Scotland, they've already committed themselves to policy, which I think they're calling making Scotland one of the best countries in the world to grow up in. And that is a wonderful concept to work towards.
It is. But
many things that can be done, and there's an opportunity for politicians, I think, to look at that and take the longer-term picture.
Do we lag behind, though, Doctor, when we are compared to the rest of the UK in terms of funding for mental health?
Yes.
How much so?
We have for quite a long time. Now, one of the issues, for example, regarding treatment of mental illness, in England, a large amount of funding was made available, in fact, by Gordon Brown, when he was Chancellor, for increasing access to psychological therapies. A very large amount of money was made available. And that has had a dramatic impact. And I go to England to colleagues. A huge number of practitioners have been trained up and are providing care. We in Northern Ireland asked for something similar, and an amount of money was promised in the past, but that was never delivered.
But how can that be allowed to happen? How does the Assembly not get that through? Why is that allowed to happen here? It's almost like the mental health of people in Northern Ireland is put second best to people in England. If there's more funding and therefore more resources available to people across the water than there is here.
Well, the evidence is that if you're in England, if you have a depressive illness or other psychiatric illness, you have a very high chance of getting fairly rapid access to a range of psychological treatments. Now, in Northern Ireland, there has been some funding, in particular for CBT, which is a wonderful therapy, but it's only one of the five psychotherapies recommended by NICE for the treatment of depression. And, in fact, I think the Department of Health did promise as far back as 2009 that there would be, I think, something like £7 million recurrent funding for psychological treatments, and also a smaller amount for service for people who repeatedly self-harm, personality disorders, people who come to the ED department all the time. Now, some of that funding was made available, but not to the amount that was necessary. And had that been made available, it could have transformed. So we in the Royal College have been saying for some time, but also along with everybody else, because the public out there know they will get appropriate medication treatment, and that's good for depression and other conditions. But sadly, they won't have the same access to psychological treatments. And as a psychiatrist, I use medication, but psychotherapy is also extremely important.
So they
must both be made available to our patients.
There are some serious questions then for whoever the new health minister happens to be. If you have a mental health problem and you live in Northern Ireland, you're at a disadvantage. So if you live in England, you're going to get better treatment. The chances are your recovery will be quicker because you live in a different part of the UK. It's just a different form of a postcode lottery. And that doesn't seem fair, does it, Andrea?
In all fairness now, Vinny, the PHF have been a great supporter of our work, and they do their best. I mean, they've just released the infant mental health strategy, and they're doing the preventative measures where we're teaching parents about the importance of their mental health, the increased development of children's mental health to reduce the like of this when they're an adolescent. And they have supported our new Mood Matters Parent and Baby programme. So they are behind us, and they're giving us what they possibly can. Yes, we do need more money, and yes, we will continue to support them and challenge politicians with regards to the budget they have. And charities will do as best as they can to get the information out there, but it would be great, to be honest, to see that more funding available for education, prevention and intervention.
Okay.
And that's the kind of ethos that we're working with.
Finally, Dr. McGarry, what do you think of the charities going into schools? Is this a good intervention?
Yes, and aware of other organisations does an excellent amount of work, and what we do need is more resourcing in general for mental health, and in particular a real combined approach involving the statutory sector and the voluntary sector working ever closer together to provide a range of services, some of them very much pure, dealing with illness directly, others dealing very much with public health and prevention. So a lot of good work is going on, and some extra funding has come through, and that's very welcome, and PHA do the best that they can. But together, I think we could do an awful lot more, and in particular, I think we could look to Scotland as a relatively small jurisdiction, not that much bigger than ourselves, and I think we look to them for models of putting the well-being, not least of young people, and Andrew's quite right, putting money into perinatal care, into early years in life, really will pay dividends in the long run.
Okay. Dr. Philip McGarry, thank you very much. And Andrea Cairns from Aware, thank you very much as well.